That's true. By the way, I already, just listening to that, I thought about something where Juan is clearly smarter than you.
What?
Okay. If I needed financial advice, would I not be better served going
me.
To Juan than to you?
Me.
Seriously?
Yeah, me.
Didn't Juan work for like a major accounting firm?
He did. He did.
So if
but I'm the stock guy.
So I guess it depends what the advice would be.
Yeah, it depends. In other words, if it's
tax
adding,
related, go to him. And
if it's adding, go to him. Yeah, if you got to add something up or subtraction, addition's tricky, pal. You know, I am getting so excited, John. I'm getting so excited. You know, the MLS is back tournament. Only 5 days till LAFC versus Houston. Only 11 days until the Dodgers play their first exhibition game against Arizona. 15 days until opening day for the Dodgers versus the Giants.
There's another inter-squad game on Sportsnet LA tonight at 6:30.
Yeah, I know, tonight. I didn't hear the pitching matchup. The other night it was Chicken Strip versus Clayton Kershaw, and Clayton Kershaw struck out Mookie Betts in his first at-bat. And then the NBA, John, only 22 days until Lakers versus Clippers.
I'm looking at a picture of Alvin Gentry, 65-year-old Alvin Gentry, the third oldest coach in the NBA with a mask on, hopping on a plane. So they're figuring out ways they're going to try this. And my fingers are crossed. I'm sending all my Irish luck to the bubble. You know, Adam Silver said something interesting yesterday, Mace. He said, we're fairly confident we can get everybody down there and have them test negative. Like, they're testing like crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
He said what would worry him is if there were a rash of positive tests once they got everybody in. Because then the way he phrased it was, that would indicate we have a hole in the bubble. But if you listen to doctors, you listen to Dr. Fauci, if you listen to Adam Silver, if you listen to the NBA's medical people, they're fairly confident with their testing program that when it starts, no one's going to have COVID. It's just a matter of keeping it that way. And if they can keep it that way, they feel pretty good about getting this in. Now, baseball and football are going to be harder because they're not in a bubble.
And baseball is working through a testing issue. They've got five teams, and we're going to talk to Buster Olney, by the way, in just a minute. He's coming up for you at 3:15. But there were five teams that didn't receive their test results in a timely way, and so they canceled intra-squad workouts for those teams. So baseball, and I guess they've brought on another lab so that they've got two labs now working on their results. But you can't have any lag time for this to be at all effective. I mean, if you've got 3 days lag time for a COVID test, it defeats the purpose. You want to know if guys are clean when they're going into a game.
And it can't be, you can't cancel a game because you don't have your test results yet.
No.
That, to me, is a little Keystone Cops, that baseball couldn't get their act together. You know, these other leagues are getting test results back immediately. I think that's a key to making this go efficiently.
And by the way, this is something that got raised, I think, by Hembo on Buster's podcast today, that wouldn't it be smart right now for, you know how governors, whether it's Governor Cuomo or Governor Newsom, each day at 12 o'clock noon, they have, they update everybody on the situation. State of the Union. Wouldn't it be smart for Rob Manfred to do that every day? Hey, we had this problem here. We had this problem here. We're working to fix that. Any other questions? Go ahead and punch yourselves out. And to actually update everybody every day on the status of the baseball season and any problems, hitches, mistakes, goofs. Go ahead and be transparent about it.
I would say that's a good idea, except they don't have their act together yet. And so you're just drawing attention to your problems if you do that starting today.
Yeah, but at least you're being transparent about it.
Yeah, but
you're
why do you want to advertise how you keep screwing up every day?
We screwed this up. Here's how we're going to fix it. Everybody knows they screwed it up at this point.
Yeah, but they keep
Here's how we're going to fix it. Here's what we're going to do.
There was somebody else. There was another team today that said they didn't get their results.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a total of five if I did my math right. A total of five didn't get their testing.
Well, last time we talked to Buster, he was very pessimistic that they could pull this off. But that was over a week ago. That was before I went on vacation. So, you know, we're going to talk to him next. We'll see what he thinks about you know, the chances this goes off without a hitch.
Yes. All right, that's coming up next for you. Buster Olney will be with us, ESPN baseball analyst. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, 710 ESPN, Mason in Ireland. What is going on? It is Wednesday, and the Dodgers, as John mentioned, have got an intra-squad game tonight. It will be streamed on Dodgers at Dodgers Twitter and Facebook handles, and also it'll be seen on Sportsnet LA. I think that's probably the way most people are going to consume it. So Sportsnet LA tonight at 6:30, get some actual real life baseball, some sports.
And so there's going to be a universal DH. Is that probably more days than not going to be Justin Turner? And they'll have Kike or somebody else play third? Is that your best guess?
No, I don't. I think Justin Turner is going to play some third base. I mean, I think that can be.
But at the end of the 60 games, the most games at DH, is my guess is going to be Turner. Do you disagree?
Yeah, I actually do disagree.
Who do you think it'll be? Who do you think will be the guy with the most DH appearances?
DH at bats. I'll say Matt Beatty.
Could be Kike. Could be Taylor.
Could be Taylor.
Corey Seager, if he's not 100% healthy, could do some games at DH. Austin Barnes and Will Smith are not good enough hitters to be. They're just going to play one catcher, I think.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what they do.
This kid, Edwin Rios, who got a cup of coffee last fall, he's definitely going to be in the mix for DH. I mean, they're going to run so many different lineups out there. They are so loaded and so deep, and they're carrying a 30-man roster with a 30-man taxi squad. I think they're going to be really, really deep. It wouldn't surprise me to see, a few guys run away in terms of number of DH at-bats. I'm excited about Matt Beatty, who I think had just a fantastic year last year, and another one of those guys who completely came out of nowhere. 265, 9 homers, 46 RBI, 775 OPS.
Right.
Nice bat, left-handed bat. I think is going to see a lot of action. Can play left field, can play first base.
Right. Do you know off the top of your head who a better defensive first baseman is, Matt Beatty or Max Muncy? Or is there not a lot of difference there?
I don't know. Don't really. The best defensive first baseman they've got is obviously Cody Bellinger, but he's going to be out in center field every day. I don't know. I can't tell you Max Muncy versus Matt Beatty and who's better defensively at first base. I'd have to do some research on that. It's not obvious, if that makes sense.
Right.
Nobody's a clank out there. I'm interested to see. Did you say Buster's on?
He did.
Oh, good. John, do you want to do the honors?
I could, or you could do it. Buster Olney's on the phone. Buster, we haven't talked to him in a couple of weeks. And Buster, how are you holding up?
I'm hanging in there. Every day it definitely feels like a roller coaster with how this has started out.
We were just going to ask you about that. That when we had you on last time, I don't know if it's fair to use the word pessimistic, but you were not confident that they could pull this off without major issues. Are you still of that mindset now that we're 2-3 weeks down the road?
So 2 weeks ago, I did a thing on Dari and Mel's show, and they asked me, the two questions were, what are the percentages you think that they'll get through the season, and what are the percentages that we actually get to the season? Get through the summer camp. And the percentages I gave at that time were, and I want to make this clear, like I'm just a dopey sports writer, and I'm sitting at home here in New York. I don't really know anything, but what I do is I call around every day to people in front offices and get their feedback on how they think it's going or how they think it's going to go based on the information they have. And at that time, I put the chances of getting to the start of the season at 5%. And the chances of getting through the season at 0%. I'd probably put the numbers, based on my conversations in the last few days, at 30% that they get to the season and 0% that they get through the season still.
Really? 0% chance once they get started?
Buster, what's the biggest reason for the 0%? Is it strictly COVID and the unpredictability of it, or is there something specific that really, really worries you that will derail the train?
Yeah, 100%. Look, and, you know, I want to make it clear, too, like, you know, and I said this, baseball is like a rowboat in a hurricane. I mean, they're completely, it's completely at the mercy of forces outside of it. You know, whether it's city shut down, a state shut down, you know, them having to move around, and the great X factor in the daily Russian roulette that baseball is playing right now is if someone gets really, really sick or worse,
yeah.
Because that will change the conversation. You know, when Freddie Freeman got sick, and then word got out to other players that he had a really high fever. And then, you know, Nick Markakis, his veteran teammate, outfielder, called him up, and after he talked to Freddie, he dropped out. If something happens like that, that's going to dramatically change the equation. And you guys are, like I am, looking at the spikes in the numbers, and not only are the numbers going up, but they're going up in states that are so absolutely critical for baseball, Florida, Texas, Arizona, California.
Yeah, no, they are really prime states that cover a lot of teams. Let me ask you this, Buster. So apparently there was a testing issue that has taken place over the 4th of July holiday weekend. I think five teams had their test results delayed. How is baseball addressing that?
They are trying to expand the people that they work with in terms of a testing. Testing capability. They're trying to get more access because, you know, as Major League Baseball's statement after that was, unforeseen circumstances. I'm sorry, that just can't be used now.
No.
I mean, we've known since when? In middle May that they would, you know, that they would be hoping to start sometime around July 4th. They can't say that. They had months to prepare for this. But the bottom line is that it wasn't ready. And there were teams that had their workouts delayed. And you heard, you know, from teams like the Nationals, the Oakland Athletics, the Giants, you know, having to cancel workouts. The Astros had to cancel the workout the other day. And that, you know, is something that baseball's working to remedy.
We're talking to Buster Olney from ESPN. Buster, we obviously are keeping an eye on Mike Trout, who is the best player in baseball, and you would not get an argument from anyone who considers themselves a baseball person. I mean, Trout is so much better than any player his age maybe has ever been that it's indisputable. He is leaning towards, if you listen to him, maybe not going. And it's understandable. His wife is pregnant. It's his first child. The child is due in August. Mason and I have both said if we were Trout, we wouldn't play. If he does that, if he says, guys, I'm sorry, it's too important to me, this pregnancy is too important to me, I'm out. Do you fear that would start a domino effect? If Trout, that's like taking LeBron out of the NBA. Would that worry baseball that he would start a drumbeat of guys opting out if he decides not to play?
Yes, depending on the context. Because we've already, I mean, let's face it, most of the guys who dropped out so far are guys who've already made a lot of money in their career.
You know, David Price.
Ryan Zimmerman, Ian Desmond. These are people who are very much respected in the sport. If they're, you know, going up to when Mike has to make that decision, you know, and I'm guessing it'll be, you know, 3 weeks before his wife is due, you know, sometime maybe next week, if you see a rash of positive tests and there starts to be a lot more concern about the direction of this thing, and then Mike and other people pull out. Yeah, there is concern in baseball that's going to happen. I will tell you, and the reason why my numbers have kind of ticked up about, you know, starting this is that while the situations with the Nationals, the Giants, the Athletics have gotten a lot of attention, I bet you 2/3 of the teams that I've talked to are saying we're good. Like, everything's going smoothly. Our guys are coming in. They're getting tested. You know, we're able to go through it. A third of the teams about that I've talked to are saying that they're having problems. There does seem to be a beachhead of hope that has developed that they're building on, and they're going to just try to grind through and make it work. But that Russian roulette and also just, you know, the potential for a sudden rash of positive tests, those are the big concerns.
You know, relatively speaking, I think it was last week it was reported that 800 people, players, front office people, team personnel had tested, and there was only a 5% positivity rate. That's actually a really good sign, isn't it?
The 1.2%, right, 38 in all, 31 players and 7 staffers tested positive. Marley Rivera is a colleague at ESPN. Just tweeted out updated numbers, I think it was a couple hours ago, that number's up to 68. And I think she counted, her sources had told her that there were 11 people who've tested positive since they've reported to teams. So generally speaking, I will tell you that those numbers are lower than what a lot of people with teams feared.
Buster Olney is with us. Buster, last thing for me, we're getting Shohei Ohtani back. And, you know, he had that surgery on his elbow, and it sidelined him as a pitcher. We saw him hit a little bit last year. As far as you understand, is he back on the course he was on when he first came to the Angels, in that the plan would be to pitch him once a week and DH him, you know, maybe 2-3 times a week? Or are they proceeding with caution? What do you know about Ohtani?
100% that he's back to where he was when he came, that the general plans – or that, yeah, you pitch him once a week and then you play him on the other days.
Huh.
I listened to your podcast today, Buster, as I often do, and one of the things you talked about that I could not agree more about is that Rob Manfred should be operating more like a Governor Cuomo or a Governor Newsom, and holding every day sort of a press conference to talk about what issues they're dealing with and to be more transparent about what's going on. Do you think there's any chance of that happening?
Mace, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because I was going to be an ugly guest and I was going to bully my way into making that point.
You're never like an ugly guest. Go ahead.
I feel like it's such an important thing. And again, living here in New York, you know, Governor Cuomo every day has basically come out and give the bad news and then give the, you know, the challenges and then what's being done to address those challenges. I absolutely feel like the Rob Manfred, Tony Clark, who are the two people at the top of the food chain, head of the Major League Baseball, head of the Players Association, should come out on a daily basis. And so when you get words like Sean Doolittle, your reliever for the Nationals, saying,
yep,
you know, we need to make this better, we need to clean that up, it could not be a better response than to have Rob on a thing saying, he's right, we do need to clean it up. This is unprecedented. We're trying to make this work under incredibly tense situations. None of this, there's no playbook for any of this. Here's what our plan is moving forward. And give an update every day, give the numbers every day. And it wouldn't only be heartening for fans to learn and understand what the challenges are, but it would be so important to the players who are really scared right now. There are a lot of players who really are nervous. You guys heard that in Mike Trout's voice the other day.
Yeah,
sure did.
And from a public relations perspective too, Buster, I mean, there's an old expression, hang a lantern on your problems. You know, there's something to be said for that. You know, if Rob Manfred had come out and said, hey, here's what happened with the testing, and here's how we're going to fix it moving forward, that goes miles in terms of reassuring not just fans, but players and other people in organizations that they are addressing those issues.
100%. Instead, the other day, we got a statement with no one's name on it, and I never actually answered your question, do I think that would happen? I've seen no indication to this point that that's something that they're planning on doing. I think it's a huge mistake. I think it would help a lot if he just, every day or every other day, made himself available to reporters and just talked about the challenges they're facing. Because, guys, they're immense. Like, it's not anybody's fault that these numbers are all spiking up and they're all these positive. It's not Rob Manfred's fault, but I don't think it helps anybody, you know, for Tony and Rob, basically, to stay out of sight during this time. I think they need to explain to everybody involved what they're trying to do.
Yeah. All right. Hey, Buster, thanks very much.
Thank you,
don't
Buster.
Forget,
that
you
was
hear,
great.
Hear Buster every day on the Baseball Tonight podcast. I listen to it most days. Thanks a lot for coming on. We appreciate it, man.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
Oh, by the way, I didn't ask you. You can do it on the other side if you want.
Yeah.
Did you respond to the Jeff Passan stuff while I was gone?
Yeah.
Well, funny you ask.
I have to grab this.
Okay,
because, you know, I completely threw you under the bus when Passon came on when you were on vacation. And yep. I said, hey, Mason claims he bonded with you, that that he's very upset that you didn't call us back. And Passon got all defensive.
Did he?
Oh, you haven't heard this?
No.
Oh, fine.
I got Ireland.
Okay, so we'll play it when we come back. I'll advance the Jeff Passon narrative. Yeah, he is not happy with you. Let's put it that way.
All right, good. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, ESPN LA, Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. Real quick, I want to pass this along from Alana Rizzo. A number of Dodgers have not reported to camp. Among them, Kenley Jansen, Pedro Baez, Scott Alexander, Kiebert Ruiz, Tony Gonsolin, and A.J. Pollock. They have not reported. Dave Roberts said that the rumor that Kenley Jansen is opting out is not true. Jansen still has not reported to camp. The thought there is, remember, Kenley's had two heart surgeries, which could be potentially a pre-existing condition. But Dave Roberts says the rumor that Kenley Jansen is opting out is not true. So that's some good news.
Okay, so while you were gone, you went on vacation for 3 days, and then I went on vacation for a week. While
yes.
you were gone, one of the days, Clinton Yates filled in for you. And Clinton helped us get Jeff Passon.
Okay.
Now, you remember that the last time we had Jeff Passon on the show, he was on for maybe 15 seconds. And he said he had to go. He got a bigger name on the other line.
Yeah, you know what, boys? Can I call you back? I actually have to grab this.
Okay, so he played that. And he never called us back. Lindsay tried
never
to
did.
Call him. We reminded him. He just ghosted us. And you, on the air, were very offended by this because you claim that you bonded with Passon at a Dodger game.
Yes.
That you smoked cigarettes with him in the parking lot. And do you remember who the third person was when you bonded with Passon?
It was Bergman.
It was not.
Who was it?
You don't remember who introduced you to Passon?
Oh, it was Clinton.
It was Clinton Yates.
That's right.
So Clinton was blown away that he was in the middle of this because he didn't even know it. He goes, I was there that day. I was with those guys. And I said, well, Mason's under the impression that Passon at least owes him the respect of calling us back. And so I basically called Passon out on it. I said all that stuff I just said to you. I said, Mason felt like you guys bonded. You stiffed us. What's your reaction? And instead of saying, yeah, I apologize, I shouldn't have, he completely went the other way. Here was Passon talking to you directly, even though you weren't there.
So can I just say one thing here?
Yeah.
Mace, I'm not apologizing at all. I very much enjoyed our interaction outside of Dodger Stadium. You have a spectacular head of hair that I'm still jealous of all this time later. But let me tell you, you got to know where your bread's buttered, buddy. And until you start buttering the bread, I hate to say it, but you're not going to get the call back.
Wow.
Okay, so you have yet to react to this. I think we rebuilt the bridge. I think everything's good with Passon, but he's refusing to apologize to you. Where do you stand on Jeff Passon now?
Let me read you a text that I got just totally randomly.
No, it was after that. He called Lindsay and said, well, give me Mason's phone number. I want to try and fix this.
Yep, after he found it all out. Yeah, he wanted to correct it.
He texted me. He said, hey, buddy, it's Jeff Passon. Should have sent you an apology text long ago. Not my style to hang up mid-segment like that, and wouldn't have if it wasn't urgent. Looking forward to chatting again soon.
So there you go.
So there was an apology.
Yeah, all is right with the world now.
There was a detente
there
between
was,
me and
you
Jeff
know what
Passon.
Was interesting? There was a private apology, but a refusal to publicly apologize.
That's absolutely right. I will not publicly apologize, but I will privately apologize.
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it?
It is weird. It is weird. Although I've made the private apology public. So I think.
Well, we make everything public.
Yeah.
I think he was just trying to be a tough guy.
Yeah, I think so too. So, John, the day that we were going to dig into Passongate,
right?
My Comrex was not working. And so I missed the very, very beginning of the show. and Lindsay and Funch were both trying
to
talk
me. So we should explain
to
the audience, the Comrex is the device by which we do the show. It's like a it's a box that we plug the internet into, and it makes it sound like Mason and I are in the same room. But we're actually in our own houses and have been for 3 months.
So this Ramona ended up having to open the show by herself.
Oh, God.
And here is what that sounded like.
Oh, I don't know about that full strength thing. What do you think, Lynn? Full strength? Momo's on, John's on vacation, and Mace is having technical difficulties. That? So you're going to have to fill me in on what's going on with Passing Gate, Lindsay. What's going on with Passing Gate? Lindsay, Fulton, where are you at?
She has no one to talk to.
All right,
to.
We're going
to
get caught up. Momo's here. Mace is trying to reconnect here. And J.R. Smith, according to Adrian Wojnarowski, is officially a member of the Lakers. They're closing in on signing him now this morning. And it is going to be Dion Waiters, J.R. Smith, Anthony Davis, LeBron James eventually, but... I know we saw the bike ride, Linz. Are you there, Funch? Are you there?
I'm here now.
Oh,
help. Man,
what's
going on in Passing Gate? You have the big tees. Got everybody excited.
There you go. That one. Oh. My favorite part. I'm here now.
Hello, Lindsay.
Hello, is anybody out there?
She was in the deep end of the pool there.
Oh, yeah.
And
with
she
no
was
lifeguard.
Not swimming well.
Yeah.
all right.
It was great.
Yeah, it was really, really funny.
Okay, so think about the Dodger team 2 years ago. All right.
Yep.
The one that lost to the Astros
2017
in the
Astros,
World Series.
Yeah.
Am I right in saying Brandon Morrow pitched in every World Series game?
Yes.
Didn't he pitch in all seven of them?
He pitched in all seven.
Okay, so this from John Heyman. Just came down. Brandon Morrow had a minor nerve procedure and would take a bit of time to ramp up. So with a 60-game season, it made sense for the Cubs to release him, and they have done that. Morrow is only on pause and does intend to pitch next year. But do you remember what a big integral part he was of the Dodger bullpen? And then the Cubs paid him a fortune to go to Chicago. And now, Mace, released.
Yeah, released.
Completely available to any. That just goes to explain the plight of a relief pitcher.
Yes.
Almost replaceable in every sense of the word.
Yeah, and he did pitch in all seven of those World Series games. By the way, did not pitch well. I'd forgotten about this. 5 1/3 innings, 5 runs.
Well, he was part of the 12-11 game or whatever that game was in Houston. That was 14-13.
Yeah, 13-12.
Absurd score. Yeah,
8.44 ERA, .68 ratio. Yeah, remember that was the year that Roberts got on that string of using the same relievers in every game in exactly the same order. He had that script. He went to Morrow. He went to, who was the lefty that he went to? Maybe Tony Cingrani, came back and went with Kenta Maeda, ultimately setting up towards, he had Tony Watson that year, another lefty, and going to Kenley Jansen. And he had a push-button bullpen that worked all the way until the postseason when we started getting trash cans.
Well, the hardest thing to do for any coach or manager in any sport is, and this is like kind of well-renowned in sports, is to, the analogy I always hear is when you're two touchdowns down in the Super Bowl, to abandon all of the methods that got you to the game in the first place.
Yeah.
So it worked all year. And then to ask him to give up on it in the World Series would be difficult. But if it's not working, probably would have been worth it. Like, I, to this day, think starting Darvish in Game 7 was a mistake. Now, obviously, hindsight is 20/20. But pull up Game 7 and look at Kershaw and the 4 innings he pitched in that game.
Oh, he was great. He was great.
It would have been on 2 days rest.
But also, historically, did not pitch well on short rest in the postseason.
Right, but you could have taken him out. I mean, Darvish, they stuck with Darvish way too long, and it just was a disaster. And probably cost him the World Series. You were there. Probably cost him the World Series.
It absolutely did. It absolutely did.
And when they brought Kershaw in, he pitched, I think, 4 shutout innings.
Kershaw was great, but the game was essentially over. There was no energy in that place.
I think it was 5-0 by the time Kershaw even got in the game.
Exactly, exactly. All right, so, John, meals have started to be served in the NBA Disney bubble. And have you heard about them getting Fyre Festival comparisons?
Oh, I saw it. Did you see the picture that Troy Daniels sent out?
I did. Let's get into that coming up next. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, so people know what the Fyre Festival is, right? There was a documentary Hulu, a documentary on Netflix.
Yeah,
about this made-up festival that turned out to be nothing like what anybody had been promised on this private island in the Bahamas. And somebody, Troy Daniels, tweeted out a picture of his meals as they were delivered inside the bubble. And somebody tweeted back, Fyre Festival caterers feeding players inside the bubble. Now, to give you some idea, just to describe, if you've not seen this, his meal for that day included... looks like half a thing of, looks like a roll, a prepackaged roll. There is a salad in one of those containers you would expect a salad to be in. There's a thing of watermelon that you would pick up at the grocery store already sliced. There's a bag of chips. Is this what players are going to be eating while they're, this is a nice meal. Like if you're at work and you wanted to have lunch and bring lunch along, this is a perfectly reasonable meal. But these are some of the greatest athletes in the world who are going to be locked up. I don't want to say locked up. Who are in this bubble. And is this what they're going to sustain themselves on?
It's a good question. I will just tell you how it normally works. And I would imagine that some of these things would be available. So when we travel during the season, the Lakers have everything prepared by a nutritionist.
Yeah.
And they have team meals at the hotel in banquet rooms every day. I am not, nor are any broadcasters, invited to these team meals, but I've seen them. I've had to go down there and like pick something up, and I've seen them. And they are... exactly what you would expect for an NBA player. A private chef prepares them. Now, I don't know if because of COVID that they would be restricted, but I know that, for example, when we go play the Orlando Magic, that would be normal procedure, that they would have an itinerary that says, okay, our game is at 7.
Right.
The meal will be ready at 11. And they'll go down and they'll have a video board. Sometimes they'll do it as part of a video session. Sometimes so my thought would be that they'll be able to do something like that. Now, let's say for the sake of discussion that this meal, the one you described, is one they're going to have to put up with for a while. I'm actually okay with that. I'm like you've said before, you've done packaged meal services, which they'll drop a box off at your door.
But better looking stuff than this, dude.
It is, because this looks like what that would be to me.
This is like I went to the vending machine at midnight because I was really hungry and stoned.
I know some vending machines are pretty good. Other ones aren't. But
that's what this looks like to me. I mean, the idea of, because we heard all this stuff about a concierge and massage therapist and all that stuff is available to these guys. And then I look at this meal, I'm like, you really expect people to stay inside this bubble and eat this for 4 solid weeks?
My guess is that there's going to be some availability to what they're used to. I don't know because I'm not going into the bubble, but I'm sure some of these things will be reported, right? Like Troy Daniels is playing for Denver.
Right.
The Lakers are staying in the highest end hotel. Remember, they based it on record.
Yeah.
So the Lakers, Bucks, Clippers, and one other team are staying at like the highest end hotel. So I don't think that necessarily every meal is going to be like the one Troy Daniels sent the picture of. Do you?
Well, I hope not. Because you know, we've talked about players sneaking off campus to hook up. I mean, if this is the food, I would imagine players would be encouraged to sneak off campus and eat a meal.
Well, Adam Silver talked about this yesterday. It's interesting you should bring this up, because I thought Silver was pretty fascinating. Funch, do you have this where he's talking about that his biggest fear is that there would potentially be a hole in the bubble? Okay, so listen to Silver. He talks about the fact that Mace, he thinks he can get everybody, he thinks he can get the bubble started with nobody inside of it having COVID.
Okay.
But he's worried about exactly what you're talking about. Here's Adam Silver.
So we won't be surprised when they first come down to Orlando if we have some additional players to test positive. What would be most concerning is once players enter this campus and then go through our quarantine period, then if they were to test positive or we would have any positive test, we would know we would have an issue. And so in terms of our level of confidence, again, when we set down this path in terms of coming back in Orlando, Florida was not experiencing case levels at the rate they are now, and Orange County, where Orlando is, was not. But on the other hand, we designed this campus environment so that we could be as protected as possible from the environment around us. So on paper and dealing with our experts, this should work. But we shall see. I'm confident based on the positive cases we're seeing from our players and the general public around the country that it will be safer on this campus than off this campus, in part because we're going to be doing daily testing. And incidentally, when our players are not playing, which is the vast majority of the time they're there, they will be observing physical distancing and wearing masks. So it's a very protected environment. But again, you know, this virus has humbled many. And so I'm not going to express any higher level of confidence than we're following the protocols, and we hope it works as we designed it.
So that's really interesting to me, because he makes a lot of sense. If
right.
if they get some positive tests in the beginning, they just quarantine those guys.
Sure.
But if after the quarantine, they got everybody in there, they tested them, they all test negative, then they quarantine and they start playing. If you have a run of positive tests after that, that's what, like Buster was talking about. Like Buster said, 0% chance baseball finishes the season. Basketball's in a bubble. Baseball isn't. Basketball
right.
can tell, like he's right. If they get a rash of positive tests a week or two in, then probably what you're suggesting has happened. Somehow the bubble has been violated.
And by the way, is this not exactly what Buster was talking about and I raised earlier, the idea that, you know, Adam Silver puts himself out there for interview after interview after interview, and Rob Manfred is hunkered down, I guess, in New York, trying to deal with these issues. A daily press conference or regular appearances by Rob Manfred would make a difference in reassuring other players, reassuring organizations, reassuring fans. Hey, here's how we're working around this. That's what Adam Silver does. I mean, Adam Silver's out there almost every day. There's an interview with Adam Silver somewhere.
Right. You guys have won me over on that. I think you're right. I think that any announcement from Manfred explaining what their process is a good thing. But Adam Silver, it's unfair to compare him to Adam Silver because Adam Silver's the best commissioner in sports. I mean, he just completely agrees. He just gets it. And always has. So I mean, there's going to be a lot of guys. And you and I have talked about this. Basketball, they're both taking on a monumental challenge trying to pull this off. But baseball's got a steeper hill to climb than basketball does. Basketball has a bubble. They've got everybody in one place.
Yeah.
Baseball's coming into contact with flight attendants and airline pilots and people in airports and hotels. They're staying in different hotels, and they're going to be in different cities. It's a much taller order for baseball than it is for basketball to pull off.
Yeah. And by the way, one of the things about baseball I think that is scaring some guys is that Freddie Freeman, who is the best hitter for the Atlanta Braves
and relatively young guy,
he's still in his 20s. He contracted COVID, and his wife said it hit him like an absolute ton of bricks, and probably not going to be able to play. That's how serious his case of COVID was. I heard Kirk Morrison last night here on 710 ESPN talking about his brother who had COVID. And his brother, and this was a couple of months ago now, his brother says he still has moments where he feels like he's dealing with the COVID, that it doesn't go away all that easily. So, yeah, I think that the big concern, you know, these asymptomatic tests are a big deal because that person can potentially be a spreader. But the people getting sick, I think, is one of the things that will scare guys out of playing. All right, coming up next, we got the scoop. All the stories so far that we haven't talked about, that's coming up next for you. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.